Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service to the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on 101 Business Principles when we return. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, which was negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits. Benefits such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush, our president, said that what Americans want is jobs, jobs, jobs. But that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, when they wrote our Bill of Rights, and when they wrote the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognized that real wealth is not measured in jobs, 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 but rather it's measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in employment. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money, the wealth, the prosperity is in private business. It's in sales. It's not in public business. And it's certainly not in employment or jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's why I contend that it's time that you and I cashed in on our inheritance and we learn how to collect those benefits of that old covenant contract and to collect those benefits in property called gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil instead of collecting it in credit, debt, usury, inflation, and then more worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on our CD Homeschool, our business school for adults. And while you're at it, start here. It's with our free general law CD package. Doesn't cost anything for that CD package. And it'll tell you whether or not this is for you. It may not be. Freedom's not for everybody. Business isn't for everybody. But it may be for you. And you can call right now and order one. And that's the free CD package by calling us at 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website if you want to be more anonymous. Don't want to talk to us live and direct, just send us an anonymous email. Make sure you include a mailing address so we'll have a place to send it. And why don't you do it right now before you forget? Remember, our business school is available on compact disc for adult home study, and that number again is 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about business principles. I've collected 101 of them in my lifetime. There may be 202. You know, some of you listeners out there may have some real neat, old-timey business principles. If you do, I'd love to hear about them. I always like to share a little wisdom and understanding with somebody else, and I like them to share it with me. Number 81. We finished with number 80 yesterday. Remember, I said a wise man deals in property. A fool deals in commercial paper. We Americans have been the world's biggest fools. Talk about prodigal sons now. You ever heard this story? You know, they keep telling you on the 6 o'clock news, America is the richest nation in the world. America is the richest nation in the world. America, we're the richest nation in the world. Have you heard it? Excuse me, kids, but if you had a neighbor over here who had his house mortgaged, his car is mortgaged, he has $70,000 in consumer debt, would you call that guy rich? Wealthy? Oh, I don't deny that he's driving a new Lexus and he's living in a $600,000 house, but boys and girls, when you're living in somebody else's house and driving somebody else's car and wearing somebody else's shorts, that doesn't strike me as being wealthy. I thought rich people owned things themselves. Americans don't own very much. In fact, most Americans are in debt. Most, more than half. I mean, there's some Americans that are free and clear. There's Christians that can count. You know, there's some Mormons out there that are honest. But, you know, they're rare. That's what I'm telling you, boys and girls. You know, there's these rarities out here. The average guy, the average Joe Sixpack American is buried in debt right up around his eyeballs. He's not rich. The nation is in debt $9 trillion. We have another $3 trillion that we owe to foreigners. The Chinese alone have $1 trillion worth of our debt, and the Japanese and South Koreans have another $1 trillion, and then everybody else has a $3 trillion. Boys and girls, we Americans have a total debt of $56 trillion. Boys and girls, the entire world economy, that's everybody in the world, for a whole year doesn't make $56 trillion. And we Americans certainly don't. You know, our whole total economy is about $12 trillion a year, and that's a lie. But, you know, just taking the government's lies and extrapolating them out, we got about a five-year worth of work ahead of us just to break even. Now, that doesn't strike me as being wealth. You know, you can run around claiming that you're wealthy if you want to because you're driving a new car. But people that are running around driving a new car, I've never had much thought of those people being wealthy. I'm driving down the road. I've never seen more new cars in my lifetime than I have in the last 10 or 15, 20 years of my life. When I was a kid, when you saw a new car coming down the road, boy, that was something to go home and tell mom and dad about. We saw a brand new car. We saw a new car today. You know, a new car being this year's model. You know, 1947, if you saw somebody driving a 1947 model car, my God, that was something to crow about. Today, you know, you drive down the road. If you see a car that's 20 years old, my pickup is 20. I went over to Boyd yesterday and I ordered a Switch. It was an 86. I have an 86 Chevy Dually. I got a Dually too, you know. Mine's just 21 years old, though. But mine's paid for. So how'd you know that when the Depression hits, there won't be repossessing mine. I probably won't have any money to buy gasoline to put in it, but at least I'll be able to park it out here in my yard and look at it. And I'm not sure that most people with their new Dodge Duallys are going to have anything to look at. They won't have any gasoline to put in it, but they ain't going to have anything to put it in even if they had the gas. Now, we were talking about poor people. Remember poor people and rich people when we broke off yesterday? Well, number 81, the poor speak endlessly of riches. You ever notice that? I mean, poor people are always talking about money. They just talk about money. And they're impoverished thereby. If they'd spend half their time out working, they'd have twice as much money as if they were standing around talking about money that they don't have. Now, the rich people don't have to be rich. You don't have to be Bill Gates. But, you know, the wealthy people with money, speak endlessly of work and are increased thereby. And I've noticed that in my lifetime. You know, you go over here to Everett or Don, or, you know, there's guys around me over here that actually are pretty successful farmers, pretty successful people in life. They, too, own their land. Old Everett Chisholm over here, I don't know how much ground that old man's got over here, but you can rest assured, he owns every inch of it. He drives an old pickup. His pickup's older than mine. This is about a 77, I think. It's all rusted out. He smokes Pall Mall cigarettes, old Everett does. He's about 88 years old, still smoking. I don't know how he made it to 88 smoking, but he did. But anyway, old Everett over here, he's got money, he's got land, he's got cattle, he's got everything. He's a pretty successful guy. And when you talk to Everett, he's talking about work. He's talking about next year. He's talking about 5 years down the road. He's got plans for the next 5 years on his ranch, old Everett Chisholm. You don't hear old Everett over here talking about money. You hear him talking about work. And here's what we're going to do, and here's the fence we're going to put in, and here's the way we're going to do that. Old Don Uchman does the same thing. You know, when you're talking to Don, he's talking about work. He's not talking about pie in the sky. He's not talking about the lottery. He's not talking about Las Vegas and gambling and wishful thinking. He's out here talking about, and he's got money, and he's got land, and he's got cattle, and he's a pretty successful guy. My point is this. The poor speak endlessly of riches, and they're impoverished by it. The rich speak endlessly of work, and they're made more wealthy by it. Concentrate on your work. Concentrate on production, not consumption. Production. Number 82. Gold is the currency of kings. Gold is the currency of kings. That's why in the Bible it tells us that we want to use just weights and balances. That's what just weights and balances are all about. So when we're talking about gold is the currency of kings, silver is the currency of gentlemen. Barter is the currency of peasants. Debt is the currency of slaves. Our founding fathers in 1787, they put a clause in our Constitution, Article 1, Section 10, that says no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. I mean, those old guys, you know, they were sitting there, they understood gold and silver coin. Now, the barter isn't the end of the world, but barter is the currency of peasants. You don't find people, you know, that are yuppies on Wall Street living on Long Island, you know, making $1 million a year dealing in much barter. I do. I'm kind of a peasant. I do a lot of barter. But, you know, barter is still dealing in property. And so the next thing down the line over here is the currency of slaves is debt. And that's exactly what a Federal Reserve note is. It's a debt note. It's a debt note. And people that deal in those debt notes, they end up poor. That's the bottom line. Poor. Number 83, never put your money in the bank. Never put your money in the bank. Well, you know, if you stop and think about it, it makes all the sense in the world. Jesus never had much good to say about bankers. In fact, these bankers, the money changers, remember, he made a little whip and he drove them out of the temple. Well, you can just about bet how that endeared the bankers to Jesus. He never had any use for a preacher either. Do you ever notice that in the Bible? I mean, if you can point to some place where he said, oh, bless thee, thy preacher, you know, God love you. I couldn't find that anywhere. He had nothing but bad words to say about preachers. He had nothing but bad words about lawyers. Lawyers, another group of people he never had much use for. So now we come down to the bankers. Should you put your money in the bank? Well, should you give your money to a thief?
Should you do business with a criminal? Would you do business with the mafia or with the Cosa Nostra? Well, if you wouldn't do business with the mafia, why would you do business with a banker? They're also thieves. The reason I say they're thieves, I mean, all you bankers out there, you know, you're rising up in righteous indignation, you know, and you're saying, my God, I go to church, you know, every Sunday. Well, I wouldn't doubt that. But, you know, the scripture tells you not to deal in usury and interest. It's against the law. In fact, it's a theft crime is what it is, and it's worse than that. It's the only theft crime punishable by death. So go to Ezekiel 18, read that chapter. It's the only theft crime. It's an anomaly in law. I mean, you can go out here and rob a bank. You can go out here and rob some old lady, and that's a theft, and that's bad, and there's a penalty for it, but it's not death. But when you go out here and you practice usury, that carries the death penalty. Now, bankers, you know, used to be, if you bought a house, you'd buy it through Bank of America, and they charged you 6% interest. So when I was a kid growing up, they used to tell us that this interest at 6% was okay. 6% interest, that's okay. But if you charge more than 6% interest, that's usury. That's bad. And only mafia guys do that. Well, now I grew up and I got to be a big boy, and I noticed now, I just saw this the other day, I noticed that the banks are charging 27% interest. That's the high end out there on their credit cards, 27% interest. Is that usury? Now, I'm not sure that loan sharks charge 27% interest. I mean, they charge more than 6%, but I don't ever remember them charging 27% interest. And they got another one out here. Just in case the loan sharks and the mafia are charging 27%, we've got a program here in Missouri. I don't know if you've got it in your state. If you haven't, you should write to your legislature. You need a law like this. We have what we call title loans. And you see these title loan companies, you know, in Springfield, you're driving down Battlefield, you know, and you're driving down Sunshine, and you look over here, and here's this, it's kind of like a pawn shop, you know, they're painted bright colors, red and orange, red and yellow, red and they've got instant cash, and big neon signs out there, instant cash for your title. And so I got to looking into this to see, well, what is it that these people are dealing in? Because, you know, when you go into a pawn shop, I mean, those guys are, they're raping you, robbing you, and pillaging you, see? And so, you know, pawn shops are a place that only the poor go in the most desperate of condition. I mean, you got to be just about ready to be hauled off to debtor's prison to go to a pawn shop. But so I looked this up. Well, here's what it is. You take the title to your car. Now, this presumes, of course, that you've got the title to your car. And you take it into this title loan company, and they'll give you instant cash for your title. See, you can mortgage your car in a heartbeat. And then you can redeem your car back. But did you ever look at the interest rate? It's 9.9% per month. Did you hear that? It's 9.9% per month. Now, you multiply that out, and it's 118% per year. Now, I've never heard of the mob, the mafia, or the Cosa Nostra charging 118% interest of you. If you have, send me the details, would you? I'd like to know. I don't think the mafia is getting 118%. And listen, these businesses are licensed by the state of Missouri. My God, it was Mel Carnahan. It was a Democrat who was the governor with the legislature that enacted that abortion. 118% interest. So when you get to number 83, it says never put your money in the bank. That means that you don't want to do business with criminals. That's bad business. Bad business. And banks are right up there at the top of the list of criminals and criminal activities. Well, at least here in the United States. I can't speak, you know, for everybody in the world, but here in the United States. I avoid banks like I avoid AIDS, herpes, and VDs, and whores down at Flo's Whorehouse. If you can stay away from the banks, that's one of the best business principles that you can find. Of course, I know somebody's going to say, well, how do you pay your bills? What bills? People with money don't have bills. I've got money. I don't have any bills. Well, how do you pay the power bill? With a postal money order. I offered them gold, but they told me they didn't want it. And then I told the telephone company the same thing. I went in there one day and I said, hey, I'd like to pay you people instead of discharging in equity. And this girl behind the counter looked at me like she had a blank stare. You know, she's suffering from a terminal stupid. I said, gold, gold. I want to pay you in gold. She said, oh, I don't think we take that. We take the gold card, though. No, I said, gold, real gold. She said, oh, I don't know about that. But we take MasterCard and Visa. We'll take your check. So I wrote a letter to the power company, and I said, I went into your office the other day, and the young lady didn't know what gold was, so I thought I'd explain it to you. Anyway, I got a letter from their business office. Actually, it was from their legal firm. And they said, no, we don't take gold here, but we'll take your MasterCard or Visa. We'll take your check, postal money order. And so, okay. These people, they don't want to deal in just weights and balances. They don't want to deal in Article 1, Section 10. They don't want to obey God, and they don't want to obey our Constitution either. They're a law kind of unto themselves. It's the law of the bankers. And that's fine. You know, if that's what they want to do, that's certainly their choice in life. I didn't want to give them the gold anyway. I just didn't keep the gold myself and give them worthless paper. But God told me not to steal from people, and so I thought, well, at least I ought to offer to pay them. You know, they don't want to get paid, but I'll offer it anyway. And so I follow this principle over here. Gold is the currency of kings. I like that. I wanted to be a king, so I thought I'll start using gold as my currency. And then the banks don't take gold, so I never put my money in the bank. And that's because banks don't take money. They only take credit. Only deal in credit. So if you don't deal with a thief, you'll never be stolen from. And I don't know how many times I read stories about banks stealing from people with their charges and their underhanded modalities of doing business. And somebody's going to write me an email now and say, yeah, Gordon, and they don't use any of these business principles, and they make lots of money. Hey, listen, bank robbers make lots of money too, you know. And there's lots of criminal activities out there that make lots of money. Politicians make lots of money. But that doesn't mean that we ought to get involved in politics or get involved in banking just because it makes a lot of money now, does it? Hell, Bill Gates makes a lot of money, and as far as I know, he's doing it honestly. So why don't we concentrate on making a lot of money, and let's just do it honestly without stealing from people. And then don't ever put yourself into a position where you can be taken advantage of. Remember that principle? And when you put your money in the bank, you put yourself in a position where you can be taken advantage of. Number 84, never buy anything you can't take possession of. You know, when you give your money to Dennis Lee for the energy machine, remember that $17,000 trick? Guy says to him, give me $17,000 and we'll sell you one of these energy machines and you can have free energy and you can be free of the power company. I'm still enslaved to the power company, 20 years later, but I got my $17,000 in my pocket yet. And there's a bunch of other people that don't. So here's the bottom line. If you can't take possession of it, don't give up your money. I always like to tell a guy, you know, well, you deliver it and plug it in, and if it works like you tell me it does, I'll buy two of them and pay you in gold coin. And you know, I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting for my free energy machine. There's a lot of things I'm waiting for. But while I'm waiting, I'm still in possession of my money. I've got my money. And a lot of people, they haven't got the thing, and they haven't got their money either. And if you follow that business principle, never buy anything that you can't take possession of. You may not have that thing, but you will have your money. Number 85, when you buy blue sky, you get what you pay for. Well, that's a pretty important business principle, blue sky. A lot of times when you're buying a business, you're so excited, you want this business in the worst way. And so you're willing to pay a pretty handsome price for it. Now, normally when you go to buy a cow, just to give you an illustration here as to what a cow is worth, you know, how do you price a cow? Well, you price a cow based upon how much milk they give. So let's assume that the price of milk is $6 a gallon. And so we take a cow out here and we say, well, how many gallons of milk is that cow going to give me? And the answer is she's going to give you about 600 gallons in a year. Jersey cow can give you 600 gallons. For you Holstein guys out there, they're going to get 3,000 gallons a year. You know, we like to have a little cream in our milk. And so we have a little cream for our coffee. We used to call that Blue John. Blue John. So I got this little cow. She gives me 600 gallons. Well, if you take $6 times 600 gallons, that's $3,600. Okay. So the cow's worth $3,600. See how simple that is? So at the end of 1 year, you will have your $3,600 worth of milk out of that one cow. Now, what's the cow worth? She's dry now. She doesn't have any milk. Well, if she's an organic cow and she weighs about 800 pounds, she's worth $3 a pound. That's $2,400, isn't it? $2,400. So if you were to put $2,400 on top of $3,600, how much would you have? Well, wouldn't you have something over $5,000? So if you price a cow at $5,000, which is, you know, hefty price, but that's about what a Jersey cow is worth if she's a good milker, about $5,000, maybe a little more. She could be worth six. Now, assuming that you didn't want to kill that cow, you know, and eat her, then you might breed her back and milk her the second year. Well, every year that cow is giving you that $3,600, and if she's a young cow and she lasts 10 years, that cow over 10 years is worth $36,000 less cost of goods sold. That's the amount that takes to feed her. See? So assuming that it costs half that to feed her, then it costs $18,000 to keep that cow over 10 years, but she makes you $18,000, doesn't she? Okay. And so that's about $1,800 a year for that one cow, isn't it? So then you just figure out, well, how long does it take me to milk her? And what kind of health benefits do I get from the milk? And pretty soon, you know, you can see that this cow over here has got some value to her. And so that's the antithesis of buying blue sky, you know. You're actually buying meat and milk. You're getting real property for your money. And so I like to get paid in gold. So when somebody comes in, they want to buy a cow, I say, well, give me some gold, and you can take the cow. Then I've got the gold in my warehouse, and you got the meat and milk in your warehouse, and both of us are pretty happy. Most people come in here, they want to write me a check. Can you believe that? They want to take my cow that produces 600 gallons of milk, weighs 800 pounds, has 400 pounds of hamburger, and they want to give me a piece of paper about 3 by 5 inches. Oh, some of those pieces of paper are real pretty. I don't deny that. But I really wanted something more than a pretty piece of paper. And they say, well, but this is money. I looked up the word check in Bouvier's Law Dictionary. It says very plainly in there, this is not money. Check is a chosen action in interstate commerce. That's not money. So, well, then they come back and they say, let me give you these $100 bills. Well, that's not money either. Those are called notes. Now go take a look in Bouvier and look up the word note, N-O-T-E. In case you thought those Federal Reserve notes was $20 bills, you know, with Andy Jackson on the face. You thought that was money? Oh, no. No, it says right there on that piece of paper, it says this is a Federal Reserve note. So whatever this note is, it belongs to the Federal Reserve. It ain't even yours. I don't know why you're running around here with somebody else's note, but that's what that is. It tells you very plainly right on there. Now, most people, they don't know that. Well, that's because they went to public school. I didn't know that either when I went to public school. I was institutionalized, remember, for 12 years. Hell, I couldn't count until I was 37, but once I learned how to count, I learned to read right after that. And once I learned how to read and count, well, I haven't been the same since. So I'm just telling you, why don't you go look that up in the dictionary, and I think you'll find that a note is an obligation. This is an obligation of somebody else called the Federal Reserve. So a lot of you people buy a lot of blue sky. Blue sky, that's what you think has value, but really doesn't have any value at all. It's kind of like a derivative. The other day, there were some CDOs, those are called commercial debt obligations, and they've been selling those, you know, these bankers. I told you these bankers are thieves. Well, they've been selling these CDOs to other bankers around the world. So it just goes to show you the bankers steal from bankers. I mean, hell, if you thought they're stealing from you, now, hell, they'll steal from anybody. Bankers will steal from anybody. They're not particular at all. So they went around the world and they start stealing from people with these CDOs. Well, these commercial debt obligations are your mortgage. You know, the mortgage on your house. If you want to know who owns your house, it's the guy that holds your mortgage. So the bankers, they bundled up a bunch of these. And they took your mortgage and 50 other guys' mortgages, and they packaged those all up. And let's suppose that your mortgage is $200,000, and then they did 30 of those, you know, $200,000 times 30. Let's just try that out. Here's $200,000 times 30. Well, that's about $6 million. So they took $6 million from somebody, and then they sold them these mortgages. And so these Chinese over in Canton, China, they bought some of these CDOs. And your house mortgage was probably in that package. So if you want to know who owns your house, it's some Chinaman over in Canton, or some Jap in Tokyo, or some Frenchman in Paris, or some German in Berlin, or Frankfurt. And it used to be that your mortgage was owned by Bank of America or some savings and loan, you know, but they don't anymore. And so what's going on here is that these people bought a lot of blue sky. They were rated 3A, you know, 3A securities, and people thought that they were worth a lot of money, but they're not. In fact, Bear Stearns put some of them on the market the other day, and they fetched it, open market bid, you know, auction, 30 cents. 30 cents. And when the bidding got up to 30 cents, they stopped the bidding. And it triggered the current worldwide crisis in money, liquidity. Yeah, it's called the housing bubble has popped. The housing bubble. Bubble, blue sky. All right. Now, you want to avoid blue sky when you're buying things. You know, you want to take physical possession. You want the cow for the gold, but you don't want the mortgage. You don't want blue sky. You want to avoid that. Hey, we're at the halfway point. I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and we are open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed to the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about business principles. Certain principles that produce wealth, produce money, that I have observed in my lifetime that other businessmen have used. So I copied them. I went out here and I solicited these little gems of wisdom over here, and then I put it into operation. I put it into practice to see, well, do these things really work? So I don't have any money in the bank. I haven't dealt with the bank since 1981. I used to bank with the Bank of Idaho, and I quit dealing with the Bank of Idaho, and I haven't had a checking account or a savings account. I haven't dealt with any banks in and I don't to this day. And I hear people complaining about the credit cards and the banks gouging people, you know, on their banking transactions, and they charge them all these fees, and they're just upset as they all get out. And you hear it on the news every once in a while, or you'll read about it in Reader's Digest. There'll be an article in there about the banking practices and one thing and another various banks. You know, I haven't had a complaint about a bank since 1981. And I don't have any complaints about the mafia or the Cosa Nostra. I don't complain about the IRS or the Federal Reserve. I don't do business with them. And as a result of that, they don't steal anything from me. And because they're not stealing from me and they're not messing with me, I don't have any complaints about them. They're bad people. They're bad institutions. They're criminals. And so I don't do business with them. I don't complain about the mafia. You know, I've heard that they're pretty bad people. And so because of that, they got a bad reputation is what it is. And so I avoid them like AIDS, herpes, and VD. That's why I avoid the IRS, the EPA, the State Tax Commission. I avoid government bureaucrats, government agents. I avoid them, you know, just like I would, you know, AIDS, herpes, and VD. All right, so when you buy Blue Sky, you get what you pay for. You get nothing, and you pay a lot for it. Number 86, in the world of business, there are at least three business boys for every businessman. Three business boys. It could be 10 to 1. I don't know what the ratio is. I don't have any way to scientifically quantify that statement, but let me describe a business boy to you. A business boy is a guy that steals from his customers. And I've seen a lot of that. I've seen a lot of that. And so I always like it, though, because when somebody's out there, especially in patriot circles, you know, see you people out there that are patriots and you're tax protesters and so on, so you go out here and you buy the Irwin Schiff package. And it could be that Irwin Schiff actually believed the propaganda that he was putting out, but it was a theft is what it boiled down to. Pilot Connection, that was another one. And there's one going around now. It's called the Straw Man. That's another theft going on. And so what I do is I just kind of sit back, kind of like the IRS. I just kind of sit back and watch. And pretty soon these people get burned. And then when they get burned, they understand that they have been lied to, stolen from, and cheated. And then they call here, and then they say, well, now what am I going to do? And then I sit back, and then I get their business because I didn't lie to them, and I didn't steal from them, I didn't cheat them. Now, I'm smart enough to figure this out. See, if I lie to you, and I cheat you, and I steal from you, then you'll complain and badmouth me, and then you won't do business with me anymore. And then I'll lose my customer. And so that's the way I was able to figure this out, that there are business boys and there are businessmen. So I want to be rated with one of the businessmen, and one of the businessmen's business principles is over here, thou shalt not steal. So if we were to follow thou shalt not steal, that is, don't steal from your customer. And every customer has 10 friends. And if you give more than you agreed to, you know, like old Charlie Hogue, I told you about Charlie, went down, cleared out a quarter mile fence row for me, made $15 an hour, charged me $300, did it in 2.5 days, quarter of a mile, 10 feet wide. I was amazed. He just got out there and he went to work. And he did the job, and he got paid for it, and he got paid pretty well for it. But he didn't cheat me. And old Charlie, he can work here anytime. I mean, when I got a job, I call Charlie. If Charlie knocks on my door and says, hey, you got anything? You bet, Charlie. What do you need? No, one hand washes the other. And so don't forget that. Now, business boys don't follow these business principles. In fact, I'm not sure that they've got any business principles or scruples or morals at all. Take Ken Lay. This guy, Ken Lay, dead now, but he used to run a company called Enron. I think Enron was about one of the biggest energy companies in the world. They probably weren't as big as ExxonMobil, but, you know, they're pretty good size. And they went upside down here a couple of years ago, and Ken Lay, you know, was prosecuted and convicted, you know, for cheating and stealing and one thing and another. Bernie Edwards did the same thing at WorldCom. And you hear about these white-collar criminals over here. So what's happening is these white-collar guys, they go to Harvard, they get a business degree. I mean, they're real smart people, got letters after their names and all that. And they make tons of money. They live in nice houses down in Florida. And they're just the envy of everybody over here until they get found out. And then all of a sudden, we find out that they were really business boys rather than businessmen who went to prison or were convicted or who lost everything. I mean, you know, one of our business principles here is if you can't hang on to it, you don't need to make it. And Ken Lay just about lost everything, didn't he? I mean, you know, he didn't. He probably hung on to 10 or 15 million of it. I don't know how his wife or his widow's doing now, but the moral of the story was he was a business boy. Frank Rocha, who couldn't read and write, there was a real businessman. He might not have been able to read these 101 business principles, but he practiced it. He might not have known about gold and silver coin, and he never used gold. Well, I guess he did before 1933. He used gold and silver coin. But until he died in 1970, he was using silver coin. And he had money in the bank. I mean, he didn't practice every single one of these, but he practiced a lot of them. And he was a real businessman in my estimation, because when he died, everybody thought well of Frank. He didn't go down in flames. He had money when he died. He had wealth. He was well thought of. He was honest. He was trustworthy. When that man told you that he was going to do something, by God, he's going to do it. Unless he's dead. You know, he might get killed between now and Friday. But if he's drawing breath, then he's going to do it. His word was his bond. You could depend on old Frank. And I've run across many, many businessmen that are like that. And the businessmen that I've run across practice many, maybe not all, but many of these business principles. And that's what makes them stand out. They're the kind of people you want to do business with again. They generate repeat business and repeat customers. People do not speak evil of them behind their backs or to their face, because they're honorable. They're honest. Now, there's an important element here to your name. And a good name is better than gold. In fact, that's a biblical proverb. It comes from the book of Proverbs. You know, a good name is more valuable than gold. Now, I got to tell you a little story here about having a good name and having good credit. Now, I don't have any credit. I don't have any credit cards. I don't deal in commerce. I'm not involved in Canaanite traffic. I'm a private businessman. I deal in private business. Now, I travel quite a bit. One time I was traveling up to New York State, and while I was traveling around New York on a speaking tour, I'd go from city to city, you know, 100, 200, 300 miles between towns, and I'd speak to a group of people, and then I'd go on to the next town and speak to another group of people and so on. And we were in upstate New York, and my wife said, let's go over to Buffalo, New York, so that we can look at Niagara Falls. And so I said, what a great idea, Niagara Falls. I've never seen Niagara Falls. Let's go look. And so we went up to Niagara Falls, and then on the other side, there's a bridge that goes across there, is Canada. And my wife said, I've never been to Canada. I said, my, what a marvelous idea. Let's go to Canada. So we went over to Canada, and the transmission in my motorhome went out. And I had second gear, I think, was the last gear that was in there. We'd go about 30 miles an hour in second gears. Now, here we are stuck in Canada, and the transmission goes out. Now, we got a few bucks in our pocket, but, you know, this is going to be a pretty expensive repair. And I don't know how much this repair is going to be, but I don't want to do it in Canada. So we drove back over to the United States. And when we got over on this side of the bridge, I asked the border crossing guy, I said, how far is it to Buffalo? I said, that's about 20 miles. So we drove to Buffalo, and when we got into town, driving down the street, and I saw this little hole in the wall transmission shop. You know, it wasn't AMCO, it wasn't Midas, it wasn't some big name outfit like Ford or General Motors or Mr. Goodrich. It was hole in the wall. And it was dirty. It was pretty poor looking, but you know, any port in a storm, you know. So I pulled in here, and there's this guy in here, and they walked into his office, and my God, there's dirty, greasy rags everywhere. You know, have you ever seen one of these shops? You know, little one man operation, and out in his shop, you know, just a little small building, just room for one rig at a time. Now, it was big enough. His shop was big enough for my motorhome to fit in, and I got a pretty good sized motorhome, but that, you know, my motorhome filled his shop. Anyway, he's got transmissions laying around, and he's got a bench, and you know, and it's really, really pretty poor looking. And I asked the guy. I said, "Can you fix a transmission in a motorhome?" He said, "Yeah, sure." And I said, "What do you think this is going to cost?" He said, "Well, he gave the brand name. I don't know, Allison or whatever transmission." He said that. He slid underneath. He looked at it, and he said, "Yeah." He said, "I'm going to charge you $2,200 to rebuild that transmission. You know, if you want me to rebuild it and guarantee it, and all the good stuff goes with it, $2,200." And I said, "How long is that going to take?" And he said, "Oh, it takes about 2 days, maybe three. It depends, you know." And I said, "Now, I got to be in Cleveland, Ohio, day after tomorrow. And my machine is broke down here. And I may have to fly from here to Cleveland and then come back and pick up my motorhome. But I'd really, really rather take my motorhome with me." And so here's a little small businessman. He's just a little one-lung shop. And I'm assuming $2,200 is a reasonable price. I didn't get a second or a third bid. But it's a big truck transmission, you know, that's in a motorhome. They're pretty good sized transmissions. It's not like the one in your car now. It's pretty hefty. In fact, I think he said it weighed 550 pounds, something like that. And this guy doesn't have any employees. He just works by himself. That was another kind of amazing thing, just working by himself. And I said, "I'm going to have to get you some money, $2,200. So we worked out a deal. And I said, "Do you think you could get that thing done in one day?" And he mulled that over a little bit. Oh, I'm getting ahead of the story. The price, I think, was $1,800. And to do it in one day, he wanted $2,200. That's what it was. To do it in one day, he wanted $400 more. So I said, "Well, let me use your telephone and let me call my broker." So I called my boy, Dirk, and I said, "Dirk, I want you to send a few ounces of gold to Frank." And so I got that one underway. Then I called Frank, the gold broker, and I said, "Frank, I'm stuck here in Buffalo, New York. and I got to have $2,500, $2,500, and I've got the gold on the way to you today. You know, the check is in the mail, the gold is in the mail. And I said, Frank, will you wire $2,500 in Federal Reserve note U.S. currency here to this checking account here? I got this guy's checking account number. Frank said, it's on the way. You can count on me. Now, you see, you got to have friends, and you got to have credit, and you got to have a word that's good. So my word is good enough with my broker that when I say the gold is in the mail, will you send me $2,500? He'll do that. See, most people, they rely upon their credit cards, and they rely upon their checking accounts. You know? But I've got credit, and my word is good. My word is good with all those who know that business is transacted on performance, not on trust. My performance in the past with Frank, the gold broker, is good enough that he would trust me with $2,500. Now, about an hour or two later, the bank calls this guy and says, hey, your money is in your account. And so he said, well, thank you very much. And he noted that it was $2,500, not $2,200. And I said, I'm going to pay you $300 more than I agreed to. Remember, I told you, whenever you do a deal with a guy, pay him more than you agreed to. And I said, now, not only do I want this out in 24 hours, I'm going to help you. I'm going to help you. I'm going to light your cigarettes, and I'm going to pour your coffee, and I'm going to help you with that big, heavy transmission. And he said, well, that's very kind of you, sir, but I really don't think I need your help. And so he went to work on that machine. He jacked it up. You got to get it up in the air quite a way so that transmission will fit out onto the side of it. And so he jacked that up, and he had me out of there in 24 hours. Now, there's a businessman, little one-lung guy, doing business with me, a total stranger, doing business with a gold broker in Boise, Idaho. And all of us working together, put a business deal together. And he had me out of there in 24 hours. He never stopped. He worked on that thing for about 18 or 20 hours straight. He got it out. He tore it all down. Now, he had to go get the parts for this. He got that thing torn down. He went out and he got the parts. He put those parts in there. He put that machine back together and worked fine. Never had a problem with it. And I drove out of Buffalo, New York within 24 hours and made my appointment in Cleveland. Now, you say, well, why did you give him the extra $300? Do you know what the airline ticket was going to cost me from Buffalo to Cleveland and then to get on another airplane, fly back to Buffalo to pick up my machine in 3 days? No. The $300 was cheap. That was no big deal. But that gave him incentive. And remember, one of our business principles is to hold a carrot out in front of that horse and give him something to be striving for. So I'm using business principles in a transaction with a total stranger in a far, far land called New York. And the guy kind of has me at his mercy. But I didn't let the guy get himself into a position where I'm hurting, where he can take advantage of me. Now, we're all working together here. My broker, he trusts me because of my past performance. I've got a guy here, I put the money in his account. He knows he's going to get paid. I give him a little extra to give him incentive. I'm standing right there with him, just like that Chinaman, standing there watching me put that shower installation in, watching as he's doing this job. He gets through with the job, cranks up my motorhome, we drive it around the block, it's working great, and I drive on down the road. Now, when we're talking about a businessman, that's a businessman. He had a customer, and he satisfied his customer. I don't know who the guy is. I probably couldn't find his store again if my life depended on it, but like Alameda Chevrolet, there's a guy that if I was going to recommend to somebody to do transmission work in Buffalo, New York, that's the guy I would recommend. Now, it's not very likely that I'm going to recommend very many people, but remember, in the local community up there, everybody that guy does business with has got 10 friends. Now, I might have a little one-lung hole-in-the-wall shop over there, but I guess he's doing pretty well. I don't know. I never asked the guy how much money he made, but I want to point out that from my observations, I think he's probably doing all right. So keep that one in your heart, that in the world out there, you're going to run across a lot of business boys, and you're not going to run across very many businessmen. And Ken Lay was not one of those businessmen. He was a business boy. Number 87, all men are motivated by vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. Vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear are the five motivators of human nature. And remember a little earlier, I said, if you can't control these five motivators, you can rest assured somebody else can and will. They'll control you. They'll grab your motivators. That's why Americans are in debt. That's because they're motivated by their vanity, and so they can't say no. They want to drive that new SUV. They want to live in that new house in the Bellwood Estates that they can't afford. Number 88, you know, after you ask the closing question, you shut up. That's a little sales tool. But when you're making a sale, you're going to ask this guy the closing question. You want to pay with cash or check? You want red or green? There's an important principle in business, and that is once you've asked the closing question, you shut up and let the guy answer. And the guy that speaks first loses. So you ask the closing question. You want to pay with cash or check? You want to do the deal today or do you want to wait until tomorrow? You want me to come out this afternoon or do you want me to come out tomorrow morning? So when you make a deal, you ask the closing question. You ask the closing question, you shut up and let the customer answer. And the customer will tell you, come out in the morning. And yes, I'll pay with a check. Yes, I'll pay with cash. That's an important business principle. A businessman needs to learn how to listen. Listen, what is it that your customer needs? He'll tell you. And when your customer tells you what it is that he needs, what it is that he wants, then that's what you want to sell him. Instead of using bait and switch and trying to get this guy to buy something that you want to sell him, something that he doesn't want, doesn't need, can't use, and shouldn't have, sell him what he wants. When the guy says, I want that Corvette, that's what we're going to sell you, partner, a Corvette. If the guy comes back later and says, you know, I really needed a station wagon rather than a Corvette, that's your opportunity to sell him a station wagon in addition to the Corvette. When a guy tells me that he wants a vet, by God, that's what I'm going to sell him, whether he needs it or not. It's not for me to decide what this guy needs. If that guy can't figure out what it is he needs and what he wants, that's his problem in life, not mine. And when the guy tells me that's what I want, then that's what I'm going to sell him. And then when he comes back later and says, oh, I made a terrible mistake. Well, okay. How do you want to fix that mistake? A lot of times people say, well, you didn't tell me that. And I always respond, well, you didn't ask me that. Now, if you don't ask me, I'm not going to tell you. If you ask me, I'll tell you. But if you don't ask, I'm not going to butt in and tell you that you need to do this, that, or something else. That's just my opinion. All right, I'm about out of time again. We'll finish this off next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Meanwhile, back on the farm, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.